Hello, my name's Helen Tovey, I'm editor of Family Tree, and we're here for a new episode of our lovely podcast. And with me is...
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
And Nathan's a fellow member of the Family Tree team. So what are we going to talk about today, Nathan? I think, is it going to include a bit of family history?
I'm not sure I really want to say what it's going to include. I might have had my DNA results back.
No way.
Yes, we're.
Crikey. So you better skip to that then. That's quite a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you got the email saying your results are coming, or how did you find out your results came in?
Well, obviously I sent it all off, and it was then a gradual process of like every week the app actually gives you an update saying we've got your sample, we're processing your sample, we're analysing the results. And then I got an email saying all the results are in. So I went to check it out. I feel quite weird about it now.
So what was the first bit you looked at when you got your results?
Oh, with the percentages for the geographical location. And obviously, I mentioned before this little bit of a joke about wanting to be a Viking, and then also the joke that maybe my family never left Pudsey, etc. And it turns out the latter's very true. I'm like 73% English. I'm going to have to get the stats up now. A certain percent Scottish, a certain percent Welsh, so basically based in the United Kingdom, and then a little bit German. So little to no Scandinavian origins at all. There is a little hint of Denmark in my German bit, so I'm going to claim that is definitely me being a Viking. Yes, bitterly disappointed.
But, well, people always say about these kind of this origin information, these geographical origin informations, it changes. So I'm way less Scottish than I used to be. I used to be 60-something% Scottish and now down in the 50s. And it will continue to change. So you might find that you've got more Scandinavian showing up in the future. And also it's the least important part of your DNA test, because it's kind of looks like it should be the fun bit, but it's a bit like, you know, when you eat junk food and it looks like it should be fun. And then once you've eaten enough junk food, you're like, oh, I've had enough junk food. I want to eat.
You just feel dirty afterwards.
Yeah. Whereas the DNA match list, that is like, that's your healthy roast dinner or your beautiful salad or something. It's like proper food.
Yeah. I just feel I've been conned all those years ago, that attractive Norwegian woman selling me pizza. Building my expectations up that I am indeed a Viking. She was just trying to sell pizza.
Well, and also what you have to remember is, so with your DNA test, it's not looked at you haven't had your whole genome sequenced. You haven't had all your 3 billion base pairs of, like, whatever the heck they are, those base pairs of those little tiny, I don't know what to call them, chemicals like adenine and cytosine, all that. You haven't had that coded. You haven't had the whole thing coded, I think. It doesn't take me long to get sketchy and guessy, but I think you have about 700,000 of those base pairs. So that's 750,000 base pairs tested out of your ancestry when you do your autosomal test. And you've got 3 billion base pairs. And out of the DNA you've inherited from your ancestors, it gets progressively smaller and smaller segments. So they're proper people in your family tree, but you might not have inherited those Viking segments. But if you scroll back and go through your completely genuine family tree, all the mummies and daddies, back to, you know, 1,000 or so plus years. If you've got people in the north of England a lot, there's every likelihood they're going to have been living cheek by jowl with Vikings, interrelating with Vikings, being Vikings. But the thing is, imagine you're like 50% mum, 50% dad. Each time you go back, you're only a quarter of each of your grandparents, roughly. So each time you go back, at some point, not very long, it only takes like 5 or 6 generations, so only back in the Victorian times, and you stop getting significant bits of your family tree showing up. They're not being able to be read in your DNA today. So let's say you scroll back to your 4 times great grandpa, you might not be showing you with matches and be able to be compared to the population reference people who are saying what nationality you come from. So what I'm saying is, you could have had people in your family tree who sat by the fireside, who come from Viking heritage or were Vikings, and you just haven't got their little segments on the readable bit of DNA, which has been tested by Ancestry DNA test.
Sure. Yeah, I'll take that. Like I said, I'm going to take the very small bit of Denmark that's lit up.
Yes.
And have that. Also, one of my friends sent me a link to a news story recently that apparently Vikings might have actually originated in England and then gone over that way.
Oh, interesting.
And maybe I'm 100% Viking, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Because there's that fascinating, isn't it? It's about, I don't know how many years ago, maybe about very, very roughly 7,000 years ago when the British Isles, the water level rose. I think a big lump of ice fell off Canada and then the water level rose and it filled in the English Channel. So people could stop being able to walk from the continent to the British Isles, which weren't isles at the time because they weren't an island.
Yeah.
They joined onto the continent. So so we could have been a lot more mobile in different directions, couldn't we?
Yeah, definitely. I'll take it. It's just very funny. Like, obviously, they add the 73% to the 18% Scottish, and I am 90%, well, am I 90%? Yeah, over 90% of the in England, basically, or the United Kingdom. Something appeared as well showing me, like, the migration chart type effort of my family, a potential migration. And one of the biggest ones was from Leeds to Harrogate, which is about a 20-minute car journey. It's like,
yeah,
I really am from Pudsey, and that's it.
Well, but that's something to be proud of, isn't it, that you know where you come from?
Yeah. It's not very exciting, though, is it?
I don't know. I think it's a good feeling, like, especially the more you do of your family history, then you're so lucky. You're living in the area, even if it's not exactly the same area, but very close at hand to where your ancestors lived. So when it comes to doing things like going to check out business premises where they worked or their houses, you can do that without spending very much time or money. And it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to get a t-shirt printed that just says born and bred.
Yes.
I think that'll be good.
Yes. That does sound good. So what about the rest of your DNA results? Have you had a look at your match list yet?
I have. And my mum's cousin's on there. So she's down as a second cousin. And then I've got a rogue second cousin who's in Australia. I've vaguely hinted at this before, I think. It's an ancestor we didn't know about. So a cousin's sibling that we weren't aware of. So I'm vaguely aware of that because my mum has mentioned that. And then I've not really gone too far back into it because I've been too busy sulking about not being a Viking. But it's thrown up loads of names and I've been asked questions about my tree and can I fill somebody in on various information about some people from Yorkshire who, as far as I know, aren't actually on my tree, but we must be a DNA match somewhere. Otherwise, they wouldn't have sent me a message. So
was that a customer on Ancestry who sent you that message?
Yeah.
Oh, fun. So have you got back to them?
No.
Okay. So please get back to them because everybody gets so tragic and sad that we send off messages and the person doesn't reply. So even if you just reply and go, hi, I'm totally new to doing family history. I've only been doing it for a few months and I'm in the early stages of building my family tree. And so that they know you're not being unfriendly. Because if they are a DNA match with you and they've contacted you, then you're their kin, their distant kin.
So they basically already know that I'm going to have people on my tree that I don't know that are yet on my tree. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that, so I don't know, I'm gabbling ahead. So it's a DNA match person who's contacted you, one of your DNA matches, right?
Yeah, I've got a link that says see how you are related, but I haven't dared to press it.
Okay, you can press it if you want.
Shall I?
Okay, go on then.
Oh, it's asking me for my password. This is probably why I didn't carry on.
So while you think about your password, I'll just try and recap that. So if it's a DNA match who has contacted you, then you are going to be related to them. So there's a slight caveat to that. If you are related to them with a very small number of centum organs, so potentially under about, it varies, but let's say under 10 or under 30 centum organs, then there is a chance that it's a false reading and you're not related to them in a kind of, in a family tree kind of way.
Okay.
But on the whole, if it's a DNA match who contacts you, you are related to them. They're distant kin. So you want to be friendly to them. And they're also a fellow family historian. So you want to be friendly to them. So even if you just reply to them and say, I'm all at sea with this. I'm brand new to family history research. Say, I'll try and help you when I can. Just give them a stopgap answer. At least they'll know They'll be delighted just to hear back from you, because really often we message other people about our family trees and people just don't reply.
Right.
It's lonely.
Yeah, I haven't intended not to reply. It was more like, because the people that she was referencing, I haven't a clue who they are. And it's like, I can't help you because I don't know what you're on about. But the suggestion might be that they will maybe appear at some point on my tree. Mm-hmm.
That sounds possible. So she could be talking about, say, her two times great grandparents, and she could be looking down her match list. And what people do is they look at the matches and they'll put them into groups of people who are related to each other. And so you could have turned up. She could have been going down her match list. She's come to you and she goes, hey, Nathan fits in this group. This means that Nathan is related to my two times great grandparents, Marjorie and Philip, whatever their names. Yeah, I'm making that up. So she is contacting you going, hey, are you related to Marjorie and Philip? And because you haven't got back to your two times great grandparents, you have no idea if you're related to them. But she's like, well, he's in my group, so I think he probably is going to turn out to be related to Marjorie and Philip. So there's two ways that this can get resolved. One is you do more family history research, building your tree back in time, and you go, hey, bingo, I have got Marjorie and Philip. Me and this DNA match person are related by Marjorie and Philip, the two times great grandparents. Or it could be that she takes the initiative and she finds all Marjorie and Philip's children and all their grandchildren and everything else and keeps building her tree forwards. And then she goes, ha, I found Nathan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Born in Pudsey. And in the birth indexes. And so she goes, that's my Nathan. And so she's done it anyway. And so she'll just feel happy because she will have worked out how one of her DNA matches to her.
Well, the result says it's half third cousin, one times removed, or a third cousin, two times removed.
Ooh.
And then it says 1% shared DNA, 16 cm across one segment.
Okay, so this is a small match. And you know when I said there's a small chance that when they're a very small match that you might not be related, but you could well be related. And the things about the small matches is because they're a small match, it means that likely they're going to be further back in time. So why this makes it harder for you to prove how you and her are related is because it means that both of you need to have done quite a bit of genealogical documentary family tree research to be able to know this. So if you're, let's say you're half third cousins, so third cousins share fourth times great grandparents. Okay, so if you were full third cousins, there would be one pair of great 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 third cousins would be great great grandparents. It's not as bad as that. So it's great great grandparents. Yeah.
Right, so that's one level above where I've
come. So, yes. So because it's a half third cousin, that means that potentially one set of your great-great-grandparents got married twice. And so you and her maybe share the great-great-grandpa, and let's say the first wife died, and you got married again. And so one of you is descended from the great-great-grandpa and his first wife. One of you is descended from the great-great-grandpa and his second wife.
Wow.
Yes.
That's going to be a good challenge then, isn't it?
It is a good challenge, but that's quite doable. So people, I mean, I didn't like this. I really wish it wasn't true, but it's kind of wishing things wasn't true isn't really, it doesn't really work in life, does it? But anyway, I wish it wasn't true. But people say DNA experts, which I am most definitely not, but I'm just listening to what they say, is they say when it gets to a small match, it could be identical by population. So there could be lots of people from a population. Sometimes why you both end up with the same segment. Or it could be that even if you, it's just hard to definitely say, okay, oh, you both got that segment. But when you've gone back so many generations, my understanding is you potentially could be related to each other in a few different ways because that happens. And you're going to be able to attribute that relationship to that specific segment, 16 centimorgan segment of DNA. But I'll still reply to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not out of the, you are going to get there. You will find, some of these things are hard and you won't find all of them, but there's a very good chance you're going to find all 16 of your great, great, grandparents.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's quite a good time for me to have this information. It's something for me to look out for when I do the next layer.
And what you can do in Ancestry, it's such a helpful app and such a helpful situation. So with your DNA match list, on your match list, it has like capacity to write notes. So you can just tap in little notes there and then. So you can say, just working notes to yourself. So you go, Ancestry says that potentially we're half third cousins. This means that we would share one of our 16 great grandparents. I really hope I've got this right. Otherwise, this whole thing's a load of waffle. But I think that's and what you also have to remember is, so Ancestry will go, yeah, you could be like, you could be this or you could be that. But there are, with a number of centimorgans, there's, it could define many different types of relationships. So it's not just those two. Ancestry's given like for instances. You could be this, for instance, or you could be that, for instance. But there will be lots of other possibilities that 16 centimorgans can share. And there's a really, really cool tool, and it's called the Shared Centimorgan Project, and it's on the DNA Painter website. The link is dnapainter.com/tools/shared-cmv4. And if you up at the top of the screen, it says enter the total number of centimorgans for your match here. So for you, it's 16, isn't it? Or you could enter 1% because you share 1% of DNA with your mystery match or with your match, or yes, your 16 centimorgans. And then, so if you can press 16, it will tell you, so there's a 60% chance that this person with whom you share 16 centimorgans could be any of these relations, sixth cousin once removed, fifth cousin, that goes on and on and on. Mm-hmm. And there's a 16% chance you're half third cousin, which is interesting because that's Ancestry's told you that that's one of your options. Whereas the Shared Centimorgan Project's going, this is pretty, you know, pretty unlikely it's going to be that. So this Shared Centimorgan Project tool is giving a much more cautious estimate of how you and they are related. It's saying very likely it's a lot more distance. It's sixth cousin, fifth cousin, fourth cousin, two times removed, lots of things. It's saying that that's much more likely. Yeah, 60% of people who share 16 centimorgans are related in one of these very much more distant ways.
Right, so much further on the line.
So much further back on the line. So
saying eighth great grandparent level.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's just really hard research. So my recommendation would be to look at your match list and not worry about her for the moment, because that's just such a lot of work and such a lot of needles in haystacks. So I would go, your match list will automatically file up with your closest relatives first, going down. And I only have a few people with whom I share a good chunk of DNA. Like once I get about five people that I share more than 200 centimorgans with, and then I'm swiftly down to lots and lots of people and we're only sharing 30, 40, 50 centimorgans.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you've got that sort of thing as well.
I've got three people in second cousin range. I've got seven or eight in third, and absolutely loads in fourth, which is about 43, between 70 and 43 centimorgans.
Mm. So I would say for the minute, don't look at anybody lower than, how many people do you have to look at if you don't go lower than 50 centimorgans?
16, 17.
Perfect. Okay. So don't go lower than 50 centimorgans, because then that's a double whammy goodness. Well, so many benefits of not going lower than 50. It means you've got a good number of people to potentially look at and work with. It means that you're going to reliably share DNA with them. It means because you're sharing that little bit more DNA, you're going to be looking at relationships which are that little bit closer, which means you're going to have done less paper trail family history research to validate it all. So if we go back to that Shared Centimorgan Project, we've still got the link, shove in 50. And so you can see that it's got 30% of people are like half third cousins. So when we're talking about third cousins again, we're back to your two times great grandparents. So we're looking at a more doable job. So you're looking at, like, not for all of it, but for quite a lot of it. It's the more doable time frame of looking for your two times and three times great grandparents and working forwards onto your matches. Okay. So that's quite a big task you've got. So, and when I just say, like, looking at your DNA matches, it feels like maybe I should send you a written list of things to do.
Okay.
Or not.
I mean, yeah, I need some homework. I need forward progress. But I guess now I'm in this weird zone of exploring my tree, but then I've also got the DNA side as well.
Hmm. Do you know what I would be tempted to do? I would be tempted to say, I've got my DNA results back. I've answered that burning question of whether or not I am an actual Viking, which you kind of suspected you probably weren't going to be an actual 100% Viking. It's hard, isn't it?
I am thinking.
Yeah. I'd park it for the moment and I would do some tree research. And the reason why is the bigger your tree is, the more your DNA matches are going to make better sense to you. Because when you look down the list and look at their trees, you're going to recognize more of the people on their trees. And you'll find your DNA matches more interesting to look at.
Yeah, I think
a month of tree building and then don't even look at your DNA. Just give yourself a month of tree building, okay?
Yeah. I have to say, like, obviously my inroad to all of this was doing the DNA test, but the idea of expanding my tree myself now is more appealing than looking at these matches or whatever. I don't know. I guess it's next level. Interacting with other people seems like the next level, whereas if I'm just searching for files and documents, it's something I can just do myself. But like you've just said, the more I've got on my tree, the more the other people might come into play on the matches.
Yes, definitely. And the DNA needs paper trail family history research. Otherwise, it's just a name. You know, all the stories are not... The stories are found in the documents and the memories and the photos.
Yeah. Well, I'm sort of jumping about a bit, but like doing my homework, which was to get my great-grandparents' marriages on my tree, I did that. And there's one where it's just a date, just a year and a question mark. So I've got one that isn't complete and everything else is complete. But that actually excites me now because this is something I actually now, my mum and dad don't know the answer to this. I'm going to have to go and find this answer. So I'm excited to do that part. It feels like proper.
That's so cool to have and you've got a specific thing you want to find out, which is so helpful to stop you going round in circles, etc.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. And that, again, last time you made me do the research log, that's really helped.
Have you done it?
I've done it. I'm using strike through. So when I've done something, I strike it through and I've made a note saying I've done this, but this needs querying, which is one wedding. I was quite intrigued because when we talked last time, we mentioned about going onto the laptop and doing it instead of the app. But I have found myself still gravitating to the app. So I haven't been using the hashtags that you mentioned, but I've been using the research log instead to do pretty much the same thing, which is interesting. I thought I'd be the other way around.
There's so many ways of doing it. As long as you keep a record of what you're doing and as long as you have a question when you sit down or you're on the bus, whether you're at your desk, whatever, whenever you're doing any family history, just know what the heck it is you're trying to accomplish and keep that in mind.
It's good. I imagine the deeper I go, the more I'll probably want to be on the laptop so I can then see more information and then put these tags in. But for now, the things that I'm searching for seem quite small. So the research log is quite straightforward for me to say, whatever date, go and look at this. So yeah.
I'm so impressed you're actually doing that.
I did my homework. I'm a good boy.
You definitely are. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we can let you off homework this week. Apart from, there is one really cool thing. So if you're tree building, and I don't know whether it's a useful thing to you, but Ancestry have just released the 1921 census on their website.
Yeah, I've seen all that, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's been around on Find My Past for the last few years, so it's not like a brand new record collection, but it's much more accessible, much more easy for lots of people to get. People who have Ancestry subscriptions can now enjoy it, whereas, you know, if you didn't before that, you were kind of feeling a bit tantalised that Find My Past had it and you couldn't look at the ancestors yet. So have you managed to have a look for your ancestors?
I haven't, no. Again, I've sort of wanted to wait until I had reasons to look.
Yeah.
Documents, etc., to actually subscribe to the whole service. And then I thought, right, then I'll go in and
yeah,
and just blitz through all these documents, which I think I'm getting to that stage. Once I find out this marriage, I might actually have to subscribe to find out about this marriage. But then I think the next level back, I'm going to be missing lots of information, and that's when I'll be like, right, I'll dedicate a month or so and just search away.
And you can go to your local library. Many of them subscribe to Ancestry.
Okay. So, does nobody sit and do the microfilm thing anymore?
Some people do that.
I've got memories of like sitting as a child playing with like my toys or reading a comic whilst my mum and dad scrolled through loads of microfilm.
Oh, brilliant.
Big screens.
Yes, people tend not to do that. But you can do. You can be retro.
Just for nostalgia.
Just for nostalgia. Yes.
There.
Yeah.
I did look at the traits as well on this when my DNA results came back in, which is an interesting thing. It's basically said that I'm determined, my heart rate recovery is average. I'm naturally strong, which it sounds weird. I don't think I am. I'm prone to taking naps and I'm a morning person, which I'm not sure all them are true. I'm not massively into napping unless I'm bored. And I've been reliably informed that I'm not a morning person. So
I can't remember what my traits say. I haven't looked at them for a while.
But if you subscribe, you get more, don't you? So that'd be quite interesting to look at. I'll go back to that.
Yes. Well, they've got my coffee wrong for a start. Likely drink less than one a day. Or not.
No, we need coffee. Well, does it go that deep then?
It's got loads of them. Says I'm naturally athletic. I don't know that I am. I don't think I am. I likely drink less than one coffee. I do not. I drink so many coffees, it's just terrible. I'm likely to be a bit competitive. I am a bit competitive. Oh my God, you don't want to be in a Christmas quiz with me or anything like that. Yeah. What else? Oh, better not let Matt know this. Focus. I'm likely to focus easily.
Perfect. I like it.
Goal setter. I'm likely to be a goal setter. This needs to be top secret.
Yeah. Do not let your employers find out all this information.
Yes.
Awesome.
Have you got hangriness?
I haven't. I'm going to have to subscribe because I want all these now.
Yes. I'm likely to get hangry. That is true. It's just not worth being hungry. It's just too grumpy.
Yes, definitely. I'm equally like that. But then as soon as I've eaten, I can't talk about food afterwards for a good few hours. I think that's a character trait, actually, because my granddad was apparently exactly the same. So maybe that'll come up. Can't talk about food unless very hungry. But then I don't like to talk about food when I'm very hungry either.
No.
Doesn't like to talk about food unless he's eating food, but only for a minute.
Well, it's a good job you work on a family history magazine, not on a cookery magazine. That'd be a bit of a nightmare, wouldn't it?
It's like knowing when you can go to the supermarket, isn't it? You can't go hungry because you'll buy everything that you don't need. And you can't go too full because you won't buy anything. You've got to invest in that mid-ground.
Mm. And if you have kids, you mustn't take your kids, because apparently you spend 20% more if you take your kids with you. That's a lot more.
Yeah, I see. I'm still a kid, though. I think I am terrible for that.
Mm.
Do I need this? No, but I'll have it anyway.
Do you know, I always think about gardening and food this time of year because of family history, because we're really lucky that there are supermarkets there. And I know there's massive food bank crises across the country, but I think probably most of our ancestors would have, you get to January, you've eaten all your apples, nothing's growing, even the rhubarb's not really coming up. And you've got that hungry, I think it was literally called the hungry gap. I think it was January to March. And then in March, luckily, it would have been like dandelions and nettles you could start eating. And people would get scurvy on the land because they didn't have enough vitamin C.
Yeah, that's shocking. That's
not, we're not talking about cavemen. We're talking about our ancestors. So these people we see on the census and in the 1700s, so the previous century to that, getting scurvy. I had lots of Scottish ancestors, so they'd be getting scurvy in Scotland and be desperate for the dandelions to come up.
Yeah.
Fending their animals off it. Get away from that dandelion. That's for me. Here in the soup pot.
Well, I've been snowed in for 3 days and I've not been able to get to the supermarket. And I'm like, oh my God, what's in the house? I feel like a bear. So they must have felt like that properly, like hibernation time. We're not going out. There's not going to be any food.
And that's going to be now. It's not incidental if we're organised people, but in the past, you need to have made sure that you've got enough firewood, food, blankets. It's not a joke.
Yeah, it's real, isn't it?
Yeah.
So much that we take for granted nowadays. It is crazy to think about how soft we are, basically.
For the moment, till the apocalypse or whatever.
Yes, definitely. Have an exit plan and a nice storage cupboard of tins.
Yes. Do you know, with the 1921, I do love the 1921 census, so I'm really excited for everybody this week because it's partly, I think, because it's that little bit more recent than the other censuses that we've been able to access so far, so we might remember the people that we're looking for on there. So that's a nice feeling, isn't it? Like all my grandparents were born and able to be on the 1921 census. Two of them aren't on it, but they could be. And then one of them was only just born. They didn't have their name. It's just called infant.
Maybe that was what was the child's name?
Baby, yes. Infanta. Yeah, it's infant. Yeah. Yeah, that was quick ready.
So when will in what way will the 1921 census like affect me and what I research? Is it just like the fabric of the lives of the people that I'm looking at?
Partly the fabric, partly you imagine if you're just time traveling back, so you're finding your ancestors in 1921. So it's only a few years after the First World War, only a few years after the Great Spanish Flu pandemic. You're heading into lots of strikes. Communism is on the rise all over the world, including in England. So that's to do with all the strikes and the workers rising up, and it's such an exciting time. And quite like talking back to tough times, it's tough times. Like people's wages are getting slashed. People are marching about it. Some parallels with today. So it's just interesting. And as I say, it's nice because you could find some people who you might actually remember. You might be looking. So for me, it's my grandparents, the tiny babies in the 1921 census. Did that hit? Right. So with you, I don't know what generation it would be.
It would be my great granddad was born in 1900, so he would be on there, wouldn't he?
Yep, so he would be a late teenager. Yeah, no, he'd be 21. Yeah, he was born literally 1900. Yeah, so you're finding people in their early working lives. So it's very interesting because this census gives a bit more information about people's occupations, actually name, employer names and the sectors of industry or occupation or whatever that they work in. Some people are literally writing, they'll write unemployed, usually are whatever they usually are. So I think it's a really relatable record because there's lots of things which we feel for them, like people's wages struggling, people being laid off. These are common human problems that haven't gone away yet.
I was watching a video from the Ancestry team and they were saying about people just coming out of the First World War and on this census, so like they're unemployed because of the war, but they'll take anything they can get, and
yeah,
really paint that picture, doesn't it? It's quite bleak, really. But
it is bleak. I mean, the thing is really bleak era. So there's literally hundreds of thousands of children who are fatherless and orphans, and so that the war finishes, but then the consequences of the war carry on.
Yeah,
for your family, hopefully. It sounds as though they might have been just about lucky. So if your grandpa was born 1900, he will only have just been old enough to fight at the end of the war. Like obviously a few people, I don't know what number, but some people, a small number of people, dodged their ages so that they pretended they were older than they were so they could fight. But lots of people didn't. So depending on the ages of your other grandparents, they could have been just too young to fight in the First World War.
Right. Okay, cool. I mean, it does kind of look like that from roughly what I've seen without doing any research.
Mm.
It's cool. Like my mum will obviously, she will know my great grandparents because that's her grandparents. She is my last port of call. So that census will help me flesh out more details of these people and might find out that she didn't know.
Mm. It's really good. And also using it in comparison with the 1911 census, because potentially, you know, even if your grandpa, was it your grandpa? It's your great-grandpa who was born in 1900.
Correct, yeah.
So it, your great-grandpa could have had older brothers who did fight in the First World War. So if you look on the 1911 census, potentially you could find those older brothers listed with your great-grandpa at home. But by the 1921 census, if they had either married or died in the First World War, then they're going to have moved away or not be recorded with your family. But, and there's the potentially it could kind of be lost from the records otherwise, but by working back through the decades, you'll be able to add these people in, even if they're not around in 1921. Yeah?
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's sad, but it's obviously, it's quite a good bit of detective work as well.
It is, and it's it makes, as soon, like, what's fun about family history is as soon as you research somebody in a setting, then it makes that much more interesting. So let's say if you did find out that your great-grandpa's brother had a brother who died in the First World War, as soon as you watch any First World War things, you will be watching it with a whole much more avidly, partly to know if it's accurate and partly to get a flavour of what it would have been like. And you'll just find your brain just on its own little track scouring for more information. It's fun.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even just from our conversations over the weeks, it's like I've said before, my knowledge gap for history seems to be shocking. So suddenly I am interested in watching period dramas and all these I used to previously avoid because I just wanted to escape. And now I'm like, I need to learn some history. And I know...
Learn some history and escape. It's such an escapism.
I know films aren't necessarily the best source for accuracy, but it's definitely opened my mind up to think, oh, I want to know about X, Y, and Z. It's great.
I think, I mean, films, they're obviously telling, their priority is to tell an entertaining story. But sometimes the things that they portray in the films, that they've done so much beautiful research that they'll show you little tiny facets of life at the time that you couldn't possibly have imagined. And so you actually get, I love those little gems. Like I think in France, they used to light a candle and then they would do an auction until when the candle burnt out, then that was the end of the auction. This is a random, I wish I could remember the example better, but so sometimes there's such, the films are so well researched, you're going to learn amazing little beautiful details. Other times the history might be right or wrong or skewy. But what I find is, so you'll be watching SAS Rogue Heroes. So the whole time, like you hear Monty's voice in SAS Rogue Heroes and you're like, was it really like that? So off you go to YouTube to listen what Monty sounded like. Oh, well, he didn't sound like that really, did he? And then he had a kind of posh old voice, but not a crazy voice like in the teleseries. Or it just makes you, even if it's not portrayed correctly, it'll inspire you to want to go and find out whether it's portrayed correctly. And like, sometimes it isn't, sometimes it isn't. It's,
definitely.
And it doesn't matter whether it is or isn't, because you still had a really rewarding research time finding out.
Yeah. Well, I too, I'm watching SAS Rogue Heroes.
Oh, where have you gone up to? Have you finished it all?
I have two episodes left of season two. I just love Paddy. He's so much fun. He gets angry, recites a bit of poetry, then goes off and kills loads of people. And I'm not glorifying violence, but obviously it does romanticise things a little bit, doesn't it? Make it fun within the realms of what it is. But
it does romanticise it, but you know, to me, it feels as though, and I know at the start it goes, this is not a history lesson, I get it, but it feels as though it's a fair and representative telling of the feeling of what it must have been like, how innovative and super brave and...
Us against the world sort of thing.
Lawless, like, yeah.
Nobody wants them to survive, really, and yet they do it despite everything. Well, do. Yeah, it's fascinating, though, because it's changed me. I would not put myself as watching a show about war or anything like that, but I'm like, I need to get a bit of history. And obviously, again, it's popular culture, but at least it's given me a little hint of it, so that hopefully when I get to research, because I do know there is somebody who went to war in my family. Mm-hmm. Lots of people have been, but there is one particular story about a guy who died in a tank. To have that sort of frame of mind in my head of what you see on the show, you can sort of visualise it a bit more, can't you, and think of who they were and what they went through. Mm-hmm. But he won't be Irish and he won't be shouting poetry at people as he's getting angry, but whatever.
I don't want to say anything because I don't want to I didn't want to. We binged watched to the end of the series already. It's like
we'll talk next time. I love it. One interesting thing, going back to my lack of movement through the country, or the world as it is with my family, when I input all of my marriage stuff for my family on both sides, both my mum's side and my dad's side, 90% of them all got married in the same church, which, and that's generational. So my mum and dad got married in this church. Their parents on both sides got married in that church. And again, like I said, 90% or 75% of the next step all got married in this one church. So it's very, very local. I don't know whether, is that just because of, is there a reason for that? Would there be like, this is the only place that people in put to get married, or is that personal choice?
So it depends on the era. So if you're talking about from your mum, your parents and your grandparents and great-grandparents, so that would be going back to the only going back over the last century, then there would have been other places they could have got married, but I'm guessing it's the main parish church that they got married in.
Guess so, yeah. Again, I've not researched.
Yeah. So if you went back another century before that, before the beginning of civil registration, so before the start of state registration, which in England and Wales started in 1837, then before that, the legal place, the main legal place to get married was would have been the church, yeah? And then over time, it, up until even recent years, more and more places have got licensed for marriages, haven't they?
Okay, yeah.
Lots of hotels and everything nowadays, yeah?
Yeah, so the potential is that was the big one.
Yes, and so that's the potential is that's the big one in the community. Yeah, that's probably the most likely reason.
I guess I'll find out if I get a generation back and it's still cropping up.
Yes, and also on those marriage certificates, it will say the name of the church. You've got the name of the church, so then you can just Google it and it will say this is the parish church of blah, blah, or it'll say other details about it.
Okay.
So, but it's still interesting and it's a nice feeling that they have those close associations with that church. It doesn't necessarily mean they were religious or not, but potentially they might have got buried there as well.
I don't think they did.
Mm.
I mean, I've not done a lot of research on that side, but I do know, I can't remember the cemetery name now, but there is one cemetery where a lot of them are buried, but it's not the same church. I don't think anywhere. My research.
And that's normal as well, just because lots of churchyards became really full. And in Victorian times, so I think it was cholera. Anyway, there were disease outbreaks because the graves were too full and they were infecting water supply. It's great.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And so then they started building municipal cemeteries, which, to remove that hazard. Yeah.
Okay.
New massive burial grounds. It's crazy, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. You don't think about these things at all. Yes. Lovely. What a lovely thought.
Yes. Nathan, so should we do our traditional set some homework for ourselves?
Yeah, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. So I've already kind of given you yours. I think park your DNA for a month. Hopefully that doesn't sound depressing. And then do some methodical tree building research. And you've got that one person who you said you really want to find out about.
Yes. Yes, I want to sort out that one missing marriage date. And then I want to go the next generation back if I can.
Yes. So this is not trying to put you on the spot. So you're trying to find somebody's marriage. And do you know what you're going to do to try and find their marriage?
I don't actually know.
Okay. So do you know roughly which generation are we talking about?
My great, great grandparents.
So potentially they're getting married in around the late 1800s?
No, it's 1924 apparently, with a question mark. Is that right, my great? I'm lying to you, Anna. It's my great grandparents.
Your great grandparents, that would make sense, getting married in 1924.
Sorry, my mistake.
That's fine. So so the first place I would say to go is go to FreeBMD, and that has indexes. So you're not going to see a beautiful certificate, but you're going to be able to search for their names, and then you can get the volume number and the page number. So it'd be like 8C16. 8C would be the volume, making you, you'll have a number and a letter and then the page number. And then you're going to go to GRO Certificates website. So just Google, it stands for General Register Office, General Register Office Certificates. And you're going to create yourself a little account and then you're going to search for them in there. Because you'd have got the volume number, you can add that in and that will help you get the correct people.
Aye, okay.
That's in there. And then you will be able to order their marriage certificate and it's basically ordering their marriage register entry. So it will have, hopefully have the old handwriting or have the little excerpt of the register. So it'll have the same information that, or most of the same information as what's on a certificate. For my and your purposes, it has the same information as what you need. A super duper marriage expert will go, it doesn't have all the same information. It's like, okay, it doesn't have all and everything, but it has, it's fine. So then next week you could have that information. Why that'd be cool is because on there it will have both of their dad's names. So you'll have two of your tea times great grandpa's names. Woohoo!
Oh.
Yeah. Nah,
that makes that solid as well, doesn't it? That's 100% accurate.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. Cool. That's what I'll do then.
Yes. What am I gonna do?
What are you gonna do? You locked your tree off, didn't you? And you were looking at that.
Yes. Yes, and then I go on a side tangent. And so I think this is a good time of year for me to get back and get a bit of self-discipline on my research and stick with my initial plan and stop looking at my, whatever it was, four times great-grandpa's little brother's second daughter or whatever, or something. Little brother, yes. Get back with the program. And I need to find out about my own three times great-granny.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mary Ann Pickering. I need to get back with her.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to do it, but the other day you showed me your research log compared to my research log.
Yeah.
I wonder if next time it might be worthwhile us going through that and you talking us through your process.
Yeah, so yeah, I'd love to do that. I love talking about a research log. I love it. It makes me feel calm, makes me feel like a detective.
Wells makes my mind explode. It's massive.
Yeah. Oh, this has been fun then. So I'll see you next week then.
Okay, yep.